Hello and welcome to another episode of Two Guys and a Chainsaw. I'm Todd.
And I'm Craig.
This week we decided to go request time. It's been a while since we've done a request. We filled up a whole month with Chucky stuff and we had a tribute episode. Now we're going to go into 1986's Maximum Overdrive, chosen from a whole bunch of other movies our patrons could have chosen. Everyone seemed to be very excited about this, mostly because everybody knows what a train wreck this movie is, and I think they just wanted to hear us razz on it a whole bunch. Or maybe it's because they know that we are both huge Stephen King fans. We have talked about Stephen King a lot on this podcast. We've talked about it behind the scenes with our patrons. We've done minisodes where we've talked about what we're reading and things like that. So you and I, we've been reading Stephen King ever since we were kids. And we've done a number of movies based on Stephen King here. And we've talked about how it seems like the more involved Stephen King is with the production of a movie, the less critically and commercially successful it is.
Yeah.
And Stephen King couldn't be more involved with a movie than this one. This was his first attempt at directing. And his only.
First and only.
He even says, like somebody, people have asked him, like, well, why haven't you directed anything since Maximum Overdrive? And he said, why don't you go back and watch Maximum Overdrive? Although he's also claimed that he was pretty coked out of his mind when he was doing this movie and would like to have another opportunity, perhaps in the future, to direct something while he's sober. You know, that is an unfortunate part of his past, too. I know that he said that about books he's written as well. So here we are with Maximum Overdrive. We're going to take it at face value as it is, starring the inimitable Emilio Estevez and a host of characters who you will see. I mean, we could spend half this episode just going one by one through the character list here and talking about their own careers, because it seems like everywhere you turn, there's a familiar face. And I did not remember that about this movie. In fact, now that I've seen the movie, I'm questioning if I ever have seen it before. I do not remember anything about it. Mm. So I'm pretty sure I'm going to go on record saying this is my first time seeing it. How about you, Craig?
I've seen it a bunch of times. When I was a kid, like an adolescent, like, I don't know, between the ages of like 12 and 15, I would go for a week or a couple of weeks every summer and hang out with my cousins, Nick and Steve, who Nick was a year older than me and Steve was like 2-3 years older than me. And we'd ride bikes and have misadventures and stuff. Like, it was awesome. You know, it was totally this was probably literally in the 90s, but it was like such an 80s thing. Like, it was a boy's summer.
The Goonies experience.
It was amazing. And we would, you know, ride our bikes to one of the two local video rental stores in their town and rent R-rated movies. And just like Steve, the oldest of us, would be like, yeah, our dad said it was okay. And they just rented
them.
They didn't care. And so we watched a lot of horror movies, and this was one of them. And I don't remember, I remember very little about the movie from that time, except I remember that all of us thought that Yardley Smith was like fucking hilarious. And we were quoting her from this movie for years. Like, I'm sure I could still, like, Curtis, are you dead?
That's one of the better lines.
I can't do Yardley Smith, but if you're listening, you wouldn't recognize her voice because she's Lisa Simpson. And she is like embarrassed about this movie. And I don't understand why, because I think she's hilarious.
Really?
She's my favorite thing about this movie.
She could be. I didn't look it up before I put it on. I knew Emilio Estevez was in it. That's all I knew. And so when it came up and the credits were rolling and I was like, she is in this? I cannot wait, because she's actually been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, besides this, The Simpsons is like her day job, but
sure,
that's her bread and butter work, and she's been in, well, over 700 episodes on that. I mean, she's one of the one of the six luckiest actors in the world, basically. Like, right, everybody on that show. You know, this was actually one of her very first film roles.
Yeah, it was her.
And it wasn't but 3 years after this that she got The Simpsons, so she must be feeling pretty good about herself.
Oh, I'm sure. She's doing very well for herself, I'm sure. I don't care, you know, if she's embarrassed about it, whatever, that's fine. I wish she weren't, because it,
right,
I just laugh and laugh and laugh, like, every time she's on screen. Honestly, I almost feel like she's one of the only ones who got the assignment. This is a goofy movie.
It is a comedy, and it's supposed to be campy. It's clearly supposed to be campy.
I know, but some of them, like Emilio Estevez, bless his heart. Like, I like Emilio Estevez. I think he's a good actor. Those Brat Pack movies I grew up on, loved Young Guns and Young Guns 2. Like, I'm seriously a fan of Emilio Estevez. But he's doing fine. He's doing fine, but
yeah,
it's goofy.
He has far more reason to be embarrassed about this movie than Yardley Smith, for sure. A lot of it's the writing, though. Obviously, it's the writing and the directing. Something about, as I was watching this, I was thinking about reading it instead. You know, I was like,
me too.
Right? This is written like Stephen King writes. Like, it bounces.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
And that's why he's no good, I think, at writing for film, because he just doesn't get it. Like, he can't, he's just too good at what he does that translating that to a completely other medium, he can't do that conversion. The movie just bounces. It's almost like, I don't know why, maybe it's because of the scene with the pop cans in it, but like, I was thinking Tommyknockers. You know how Tommyknockers, the novel, bounces back and forth between all these different characters, some of whom never end up meeting up. In this movie, they don't all end up meeting up sometimes for a very, very long time. In a book, it's fine. In the movie, somehow it loses focus. It loses momentum, right? You have all these awesome scenes. Actually, I was really liking the first few scenes of the movie. And then it was just, there was another scene just like it. And then there was another scene just like it. And they're not really connected. And they're all like different people. And then it started to almost feel, okay, I get it. Let's move on to the real story. You know, 20 minutes of the movie is set up of all of these disconnected, disparate scenes where on their own, they're pretty badass, like a bunch of cars getting stuck on a bridge as it's being lifted up and people sliding and falling and shit and people are crashing through windows. I mean, it's gory. It's kind of nuts. That was kind of fun. The hilarious scene of the Little Leagues and the guy going to get himself a soda from the soda machine. And the first thing the machine does is shoot a pop can out into his nuts.
Yeah. Stephen King, like in his novels, he does so much world building and he has time to do that in a novel.
Yeah.
And he's talked about this. He's like, that's why he forces himself to continue to write short stories and to publish short story collections, because it forces him to limit himself in scope and time. But he has said, in novels, I can do whatever I want. I can write 1,000 pages. I can do whatever I want. And he does. And he takes the time. And you get to know, usually, well, not, I don't know about usually, but a lot of the times, like a whole community of people, and you get to know them pretty darn well.
Yeah.
So that then as things start happening, you're engaged in all of these people. He's got some interesting characters in this movie. Like, I think this could have been a decent Stephen King novel.
Right.
But the characters are so silly and one note.
Yeah, there's too many of them.
Oh, there's so many. I didn't know who half of them were, and I didn't care.
No, I didn't know their names. I tried writing names down, and then it was like I got the names wrong. Like I thought they were being called one thing, and then halfway through the movie, it turns out this name is... I thought that Joey was Job, and I thought that Henry's name was Bubba.
Well, that's because the boss... That guy is famous too. What's his name? Pete Hingle. Yeah. He's been in tons of stuff and has played this character like a bunch of times, it seems like.
Yeah.
But it was confusing because I thought his name was Buddy because he calls himself Buddy.
Yes.
He's on the phone. Tell him it's Buddy. But he also calls everybody else Buddy. That's the only name that he is familiar with. And that's just everybody's name. Except for Joey. He calls Joey Joey. I guess they have.
They have a special connection.
I don't like, there are so many things to talk about as like, I think about Joey and then I think about that scene in the movie where Emilio Estevez has a conversation with Joey while Joey is on the toilet. Yes. They are just having a conversation and he's like
farting and making sounds. I was like, nobody would put that in normally. I mean, outside of a Jim Carrey movie or something.
Right. I mean, obviously, it's sound effects put in later, obviously, but it's so silly. Like, it sounds like somebody's off to the side with like a fart machine, like,
bah. Tell me, man, has he really got a lot of firepower down the cellar? Well, you heard him tell me to shut up, didn't you? Oh, come on, Joy, this is serious. He's got a lot. Well, what else? Flamethrowers, rifles, what? You're going to get us in an awful lot of trouble, man. Guess you didn't realize it, buddy. We already in trouble. Talk to me, Joey.
And then, I don't even like talking to other guys at the urinal. Like, don't talk to me.
Oh, yeah.
While I have my dick out, like, this is weird, but you know, I can do it. Eyes to the wall.
There's a protocol. Yeah.
It's fine. Do not talk to me if I am taking a shit. I don't want to talk to you. I'm doing something.
Yeah.
And also, if you, Emilio Estevez, come up over the stall to have a conversation with me, I am going to shoot you in the face. I am not okay with that. That was the weirdest thing, the weirdest scene.
It was one of the weird scenes. There are many weird scenes in
here.
There
are so many. Okay, so we should probably talk about the premise, right?
Yeah, which I wasn't expecting.
Oh, it's so silly and stupid. It starts out with just like it's space, and then it pans down and it's Earth.
I didn't think this was that kind of movie that I was going to see.
I know.
Like a Star Wars intro for.
Well, it felt like Killer Clowns or something. And then not even a scroll, just a big block of text comes up and I wrote the whole thing down. Okay, here we go. On June 19th, 1987 at 9:47 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Earth passed into the extraordinarily diffuse tail of Rhea M, a rogue comet. According to astronomical calculations, the planet would remain in the tail of the comet for the next 8 days, 5 hours, 29 minutes, and 23 seconds.
Right away, you know this man should not be writing a movie.
This has seemingly nothing to do with the events of this movie. Like, we do not need this. Like, we do not need an explanation. This isn't an explanation anyway.
Right.
Like, oh, it's because of the comet. And the road twitch girl, Brent, at one point in the movie, she's just like, I think it's the comet. And that's it. Like, that's the only time they ever talk about it.
There's the green stuff in the sky all the time.
Yeah.
That's fun. Which all this raises big questions for me. Is that a thing? Can the Earth be engulfed in the tail of a comet? Wouldn't that be like a big ass comet? And wouldn't it have to like pass through the Earth? I don't know. Whatever.
Immediately, like it just jumps right in. The machines are going crazy.
No, the machines are insulting everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. The flashing thing, like the bank marquee says, "F you." And then Stephen King goes to the ATM.
Honey. Come on over here, sugar buns. This machine just called me an asshole.
Which is a very Stephen King role, and I was really happy to see his cameo right off the bat. I guess when you're director, you can do that. Maybe he wanted himself first thing in the movie.
I like when he cameos in his movies. He's not a good actor either.
No, but it's fun.
Anytime I throw these jabs at Stephen King in the back of my mind, it's like, you better hope he doesn't hear that. Stephen King, if this somehow gets to you, I am a huge fan. You're one of my favorite authors. Let's just leave it at that.
I'd like to think that Stephen King has a good sense of humor about himself when it comes to this kind of thing. That
I'm sure he does. He's a smart guy.
At least he does a little more than like, I can't believe I'm mentioning that in the same sentence, but like Alfred Hitchcock, you know, he didn't even talk in his cameos. He just sort of walked by the screen. Stephen King throws himself out there.
He's funny. I say he's not a great actor. So what? Who cares? You know, it's little cameos.
And goofy roles sometimes.
Yeah,
that are cool.
He's funny. He was funny in Creepshow in that silly segment where he's covered in grass and stuff.
I like that.
I liked his cameo in It. It's just fun when he pops up like, I see you.
One of the other things I really liked about this was what came up that AC/DC was doing the music for the film. And I didn't realize they were also more or less writing the score. I'm a big AC/DC fan, really love their stuff. They're just nice, hard rock, 80s, 90s. They're still performing. I've been to their concerts. It's high energy, just great show, just unabashed, heavy, fun stuff, which I actually thought suited this movie about heavy machines quite well. Heavy machines and highways, that's what these guys are all about. And I mean, that's a plus, you know, if you put, you know, the checks on the positive, the checks on the negatives with the movie, I thought that having AC/DC was a solid choice. And there was that cue that came on. You know what I'm talking about? Especially the first, I don't know, three or four kills, there would be suddenly this like riff. That went on just a little too long. And after it happened the third time at the third kill, I was actually chuckling. I thought, is this a joke? Because it's starting to sound really cheesy and silly.
I don't know. I don't know if I noticed that, but I really did enjoy their music. I haven't been a huge fan of theirs. Like, I know their most famous songs, but hearing their music in the background of this the whole time, I was like, I dig them. This is good. Yeah. I could listen to this. They, you know, Stephen King was a big fan of theirs. He crossed paths with them and said, would you guys do this movie with me? He convinced them by singing one of their less popular songs, start to finish. And they were amused enough and thought, if you're that big a fan, we'll do it. He wanted them also to appear in the film, but they were like, no, we're not actors. So they didn't do it. Probably a smart move.
Well, Stephen King himself is a pretty decent, from what I understand, guitar player. I mean, they have a little band of misfits they throw together. I can't remember who all else is in it. That's just a bunch of like Alice Cooper might be in it. I don't know. Like they just they get together every now and then and jam and have performed in shows and stuff. And he clearly music is something he's been into. So I wasn't surprised that when he had full control, you know, that he went this direction. It was pretty nice.
I liked the score a lot. I liked the music. I think that's one of the best things about the movie. Honestly, like you said in the beginning, pretty much everybody acknowledges that it's garbage. And when we decided to do it again, I mean, you put it, I know that people have talked about it on our boards and stuff, but you put it on the request poll with our patrons. And I was like, ugh. But they picked it and I was like, all right, it's fine. It'll be fun to talk about because it's so bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it again. I'm like, it's not that bad. Why are we so hard on it? As far as 80s movies go, yeah, it's really goofy, but lots of movies in the 80s were goofy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's silly, but it's fine.
It's a mix of intentionally comic and unintentionally comic. It's hard to take it too seriously because, number one, what you just said, the 80s was kind of a time for tough guy machismo goofiness and cheese and some, you know, things were just a little sometimes overly dramatic and kind of silly. Not realistic, but in fun ways. On the other hand, I don't think he himself was trying to make a serious horror film with this either. I mean, it's pretty obvious. There's a lot of intentional humor in here. There's a lot of jokiness. And part of the problem with it is just tonally, it's kind of hard to tell when it's doing one thing and when it's doing another thing. And I think that's what people like to laugh at so much about it. That and some of these performances are ridiculous. Some of these characters are kind of silly. Some of these scenes are bizarre. But God, man, some of this action is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the sound. I read in the trivia, or maybe it was on Wikipedia, that one of the people involved in the production said that King would drive to the set in the mornings in his motorcycle down the highway intentionally so that he could get up close to these trucks and sort of hear what they sound like and feel their danger, just to get that in him. And I think he translated that really well to the screen. I'm watching this movie and I'm just, it's like I can smell the diesel and the smoke. I'm feeling hot, you know, like I'm behind everybody's sweating. Everything's kind of dirty, just like trucks are, you know, and they're big and there's metal and with that score behind it and the rumbling and the belching smoke and the destruction. I mean, at one point, this movie just becomes one big demolition derby. Yeah, like that was real visceral. And that I thought was well done.
Well, I know. I mean, what it comes down to, basically, we focus around this group of people at a truck stop, kind of out in the desert in the middle of nowhere. And when the machines go nuts, the big trucks all around come alive. It's kind of gradual at first, like one or two randomly. And when I say come alive, I just mean like automate themselves, you know, like they're self-controlled or whatever. And they like charge at a couple of people, but everybody's like, what's going on? That's weird.
that's part of what's kind of silly about this movie is nobody seems to react in the way that they should be reacting. A lot of it is them just sitting around going, well, I hope this dies down soon, you know, like playing cards and shit. Like nobody's making plans of how to escape this truck stop that they're trapped in and whatnot. But it's not just the trucks, right? It's supposed to be all the machines. And that's also where it gets a little weird and silly, because there's one point at which this kid is riding his bike down the street and the sprinklers are coming on and off. Okay, I don't know if everybody understands how sprinklers work.
I don't.
They're not electrical. It's just water pressure. When the water's on and it goes through the sprinkler, the water pressure makes the jets shoot up. And even that little motion that they have is just clever gears inside there that make it go back and forth. They're not really machines in the sense. It's almost like having that kid's bicycle have a life of its own, you know?
Right.
It's not electrical, mechanical kind of machine.
I'm less bothered by that than I am that some machines are sentient and can kill you. Like blow dryers. A blow dryer killed a woman. What? How did that happen?
No, please stop blowing at my face.
I know. It looks as though she was strangled with the cord. Like a machine can't do that. That doesn't make sense.
Whip its cord around somehow.
No, because it's not like they're ghosts. Yes. I guess maybe there are invisible aliens controlling. I don't know. I don't understand. But I also don't. I don't understand why some of them, because like the newlyweds. God, I love the newlyweds so much.
Oh, yeah.
But they drive around in their car. They're getting chased by other cars. Why is their car not?
Their car's on the good side or something. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. But you're right. It's not just because like a turkey carving knife cuts up Wanda June, the waitress, who is hilarious. And I can't wait to talk about her. And then there's an arcade and everything starts going nuts. Like the coin machine is like shooting out money and the cigarette machine is shooting out money. And there's this guy in there like collecting all of it and he's all proud.
Oh, that guy, Giancarlo Esposito. Oh,
I don't know who that is.
Gus Fring. Did you ever see Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul?
No.
He's one of the main baddies in that movie, in that show. He's absolutely wonderful. And to see him pop up in this movie earlier in his career, I couldn't believe it. It was so much fun.
It was hilarious because he loads up on all that stuff. But then one of the video games like hypnotizes him.
Like it knows what to do. And then as he gets close and he puts his hand on it, it electrocutes him.
Yeah. Oh, hilarious. God. So there's that. But then the trucks, the gas pumps, I don't know. Like anything, I guess, can be self-automated, but not everything is all the time.
Yeah.
And it's very unclear. Like, I want to jump ahead to the end because at the end, there's another
super long
big chunk of text that tells you that a Russian weather satellite shot down or blew up an alien spacecraft. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, I thought it was the shadow of the comet, and now it's like, was the comet harboring an alien spacecraft? And I just laughed so hard when that came up on the screen. I thought it was just a big joke.
Oh, God. Emilio Estevez talks about it at some point, too. Emilio Estevez is our hero, all 5'6" of him, and I'm a short guy, too. I'm just making jokes.
You're jealous. You want to be a hero. It's fine. You could be a hero, Craig.
I could be Emilio Estevez, I think.
Fair enough.
But he works as a cook at this truck stop, and his boss, whatever his name is, the fat old guy,
Hendershot, right,
is an asshole just all around. Like, he's just the asshole. That's it. Just anticipate anything that he's going to say is going to be a douchebag something. He only hires people on parole, people on probation, so that he can like abuse them and make them work overtime for free because either you're with me or you're with the state or this. So stupid. Why do I care? Why am I explaining all this? It doesn't matter.
I don't know. I was wondering that myself.
I know. It doesn't matter. But so he's that guy. And then there's a bunch of other guys.
There's too many guys. There's just too many people here.
Yeah. And then so the trucks start driving around. That you said something about the baseball game that you talked about. Not only does that soda machine shoot the one guy in the nuts, it then also kills him by shooting him in the head with a can.
I suppose if you got pelted hard enough, it's like being stoned. Yeah, it's like being stoned.
Right.
Not the good kind of stoned.
No. Right. It took me a second. But the other thing that I love about, and this is also something that I vividly remember from my childhood viewing of this, was out of nowhere onto the baseball field comes a steamroller.
That was fantastic. Because, you know, there's always a steamroller nearby.
And it rolls over a kid.
Oh, my God. How bold was that? I was not expecting that. When that happened, and it was a bit graphic. I mean, you kind of see his head go under there. You don't see any blood. Apparently, in the original production of this movie, they had a big bag full of blood. And it even kind of exploded a little prematurely to the point where it looked like the kid's head had exploded. Stephen King loved the effect, but the MPAA was like, yeah, that's cut that out.
Too much. Too much. I so vividly remember this image of a kid getting run over by a steamroller.
It's horrifying.
And then there's like a Bible salesman and this female hitchhiker, this lady, Brett. She's played by Laura Harrington. I'm like, I recognize her. And it took me a second to place her. But as soon as I went to her IMDb page, her IMDb profile picture is a still of her from a movie that we've done. I think, have we done The Devil's Advocate?
Yep.
She was Craig T. Nelson's secretary/mistress. And that's what I knew her from. She's been in a bunch of other stuff, too. She hasn't acted, I don't think, since like 1999 or something. But anyway, so she's like, I don't know, supposed to be, I guess, the badass girl. It's so convoluted.
Kind of, but not really.
It's convoluted and stupid. Like, she and Estevez eventually hook up. Like, they're immediately drawn to each other. And they're, again, it's like, over the course of a book, this would make sense. But in this movie, it's over the course of like 5 minutes that they meet, they hug, they fuck, and then they're a couple.
Yeah.
And they're in love.
And they're having deep conversations with each other out of the blue. Yeah, it's very jarring and it doesn't really play well.
They're calling each other babe and like kiss, like giving each other like kisses on the lips, like, bye. Like, what are you talking about? You just met.
And these also are not set up to be the kinds of people that would be lovey-dovey like that. He's kind of supposed to be this hard-assed ex-con.
But he's not.
Most of the movie, he just kind of stares off into space and grunts a lot and looks pensive.
But he's smart. He's self-deprecating, but he's smart and he's a hero.
Oh.
She keeps telling him that over and over again. You're a hero.
She has to keep feeding this guy's ego.
I'll tell you one thing.
What's that?
You sure make love like a hero.
She says that. That's a line in the movie.
It's true. A lot of these lines, again, I was thinking, oh, if I had read this in a book, it would have played a lot better. In the movie, it just comes out of nowhere and it just feels corny.
Super corny.
You know, you say that he's the hero, but it's really hard to tell. You know, we did Predator, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? And even though Predator starts off as an ensemble film with all these characters, they have a role to play, you're never in doubt who the main guy is. Who's the guy who's ultimately going to save the day? And movies just kind of tend to follow that formula, especially big action movies like this. It's like when we watch a horror movie and it's like, oh, well, she's the final girl. You know, that's projected from the very beginning, and she's in it enough, and she's the person with enough agency throughout the film that you've got time to get behind her, and you've kind of got time to see what she's made of, and she has the opportunity to solve some problems, to get some people out of some scrapes, to barely get away. And so, you know, it's just like, it's kind of a thing that we do with cinema. There's that, like, central protagonist. Emilio Estevez, like, he's got about as many scenes as anybody else in this movie, and most of the time, he's not doing anything until he gets an idea about three quarters of the way through the film. And then, okay, now he turns out he and a couple other people are going to be the ones to go out and take care of this guy who's stuck across the road. And then he's the one who now suddenly has a great idea about what these people really want, you know, about the aliens are going to come and sweep the earth clean before they come. God. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I mean, I thought that it was pretty clear that he was supposed to be our main character, but
just because he is the young,
yeah,
young
yeah.
famous guy, yeah. that's all.
He's top billed.
That's it.
But there are so many side characters, like, and eventually they all converge. Most everybody is at the truck stop, and eventually everybody converges there. But there are also, there's this pair of newlyweds, Curtis and Connie, and Connie is Yardley Smith, and they have so much great dialogue. One of my favorites was when they were putting her down in the sewer and she was like,
I bet there's spiders down there. Oh, I hate anything with more than four legs. I can't do this. I'm just going to keep talking. Oh, don't drop me now. I'm delicate now. I'm just going to keep talking.
Like, she just keeps going and going and going and going. She's just talking all the time in that hilarious voice. And
although her Southern accent comes and goes.
I didn't notice. I was just so amused.
As a voice actress, I do wonder if that's what part of why she was embarrassed by her performance in here.
What are you doing?
I'll be right back.
You ain't going.
There's a man laying hurt out there, honey.
There's gonna be a man laying hurt in here if you don't quit this foolishness.
If it was your man out there, you'd want someone to go, wouldn't you?
Well, it ain't. You're not going.
I'm going.
Don't make me a widow on my wedding day, Curtis.
But anyway, and then there's a kid, Deke, who is the son of one of the guys who works at the truck stop, who gets killed like immediately.
Like, well, first he gets diesel in his face.
Now, Stephen King doesn't pull punches in his books either, but I felt like this was kind of mean to have this one guy who's concerned about his kid. And he's like, I have to go out there. I have to find my kid. And he takes two steps out the door and gets he explodes, basically.
Yeah. Because that could have been
that's mean.
And it also could have been kind of a thread that went through the whole movie. I mean, I was just thinking about how many different directions you could have taken this. Maybe it's because, you know, recently we saw a much better film with a similar scenario, The Mist, right?
Right.
You've got all these characters. Everybody's got their own motivation. This woman needs to get home to her kid, right? This woman thinks that Satan's coming to harm them. This guy thinks they should never go out or do anything. This guy's like, no, we need to charge forward to them. And, you know, the story is the conflict between these characters as they're trying to sort out what they're going to do. You know, the plot unfolds as each of them kind of get their chance and we see what happens. Well, here, like, this guy could have been struggling to see his kid all. I mean, we kind of knew that this was his kid.
Kind of.
It wasn't told to us directly, but there's the only other kid in the movie. Right. So I sort of figured, all right, this is probably what's going on. And so, like, that could have been a thing. Oh, he's coming here. He's trying to get to them. No, don't go out. I just didn't expect him to die the minute he was like, no, I need to step outside and see my kid.
Yeah, well, and then, so the kid, Deke, is trying to make his way to the truck stop to his dad. And we follow that for a long time. Like, he,
yeah.
And we see so many things through his eyes. The dead dog with the toy car in its mouth. Like, what? I don't remember.
What was that? I want to know how that went down. I
people,
really do.
Like, car crashes all over the place where people are hanging out of their windows.
Comically just hanging out the window with their tongue out. I mean, sometimes it's a little silly.
It's very silly. They're all, everybody that you see in a car is hanging out.
And yet, otherwise, everything else is very quiet and pristine.
Yeah.
I just don't understand. It's a completely suburban neighborhood. And I was like, did everybody leave? Is everybody cowered in their homes? Or are we to believe that everybody is sitting dead in their homes?
Yes.
And the only evidence we have of that is that every now and then someone's hanging out the window with the cord around their neck or something like that. That's the direction he chose.
Uh-huh. And it's nutty. And there's one part where a lawnmower starts chasing the kid. Like, it comes to life and starts chasing a kid. I read that there was a terrible accident where that lawnmower went out of control and like ran over a block of wood and shot shards of wood everywhere. And what some guy on the crew lost an eye.
The cinematographer Armando Nannuzzi, who, by the way, had asked to remove the blades from the lawnmower. And he wasn't the only person on set who had asked to remove the blades. And against all logic, really, King was like, no, it'll be more realistic if the blades are in there. And they're like, but you're never going to see them. He's like, no, they need to be in there. And thanks to that decision, he lost an eye. And in fact, this was one of the last movies he did because he was pretty convinced that nobody would want to hire a director of photography who no longer had any depth perception. And so he retired years after this and then died not long after that. I mean, it's really kind of sad. I think he got a $18 million settlement.
Well, that's what he sued for, but they settled out of court. So I don't know.
Oh, right.
I mean, I hope he got a good settlement. He deserves it. That's, you know, to be fair, you know, Stephen King doesn't like this movie either. He admits, I think you maybe already said before, that he was coked out of his mind for the duration of filming. He said, I didn't have any idea what I was doing. Some people believe that George Romero, like, ghost directed this. And I guess King has never... he's just never addressed that, but
he was apparently on set quite a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. He has said that he was, that Romero was on set like the whole time, like all the time. And that's fine. I mean, they're friends. They've been,
this was
post Creepshow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, they're friends, they're collaborators. If he got help, however much help, whatever, that's fine. But I imagine that accident, I'm sure Stephen King felt very bad about it. Because it's pretty terrible. But anyway, they're eventually all there. At some point, all the trucks start circling they're just driving around and around and around, which I don't understand other than it's menacing.
Yeah.
Like, what is their purpose?
I don't know.
Like, if their purpose is to wipe these people out, just wipe them out. If they don't care about the people, leave. All they're doing is running down their gas.
Yes.
And then later they need to be filled up. Doesn't make any sense.
Which is a whole other thing.
It is menacing, and I appreciate that. You know, it's also kind of ironic that we haven't mentioned that one, like, the iconic image from this movie is one of the trucks is a truck for a toy company, and it has a huge Green Goblin face on the front. And I just remember thinking that was so badass looking when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And when I saw it on the shelves, I think that ultimately when I saw the movie, I was a little disappointed because I thought that that was going to be more of a thing. Like, I thought it was really going to be like a demon truck.
Yes.
Like with a face.
And again, another missed opportunity, right? Where is the primary antagonist? Have you seen the Steven Spielberg movie Duel? It's about a killer truck, a truck that's, we think, is driving itself. It's actually probably driven by a person, but the person is so understated deliberately that it just feels like the truck is coming after this guy. And that does this great job of putting a lot of character behind this truck. And I sort of felt like the movie, when I first saw it this time, and also because I know that image, I saw it on the shelves too, I thought this was going to be like the leader truck. This is the primary mean, angry leader truck that is going to eventually become a thing at the end, like the last standing truck that they have to kill, which it actually kind of is. But during the movie, it's not. It's there at the beginning. He has a moment with it when he's filling it up with gas and its eyes glow red and stuff. I'm not sure what the logic is behind that, but I'm willing to go with all that. But no, it's just mostly other trucks. It's any random truck kind of running them down, and there's no point at which any of them seems to be particularly in charge. Then the machine gun truck comes in, and it's definitely in charge. What was that?
Is that a thing?
In what world is there a platform on four wheels that has a giant machine gun on a stick?
That's the weirdest thing. But that Green Goblin truck, like, it's the only truck with any personality, And so I just wanted it to be more of a character. Like, if you're going to give it a personality, like,
make it a character.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, ultimately, it's the last one that they face off with. And if it had been any other truck, it would have just been any truck. At least it's the one that we follow. I mean, I guess the machine gun truck is a character.
More of a character, really.
The ice cream truck, that song is King of the Road, which I thought was hilarious.
The ice cream truck, kind of a running joke. Yeah, I thought that was...
It's kind of a character, I guess. And they show up and get blown up. So these trucks are just circling or whatever, and they don't know what to do, except for at one point, after a truck tries to run down somebody, out of nowhere, the jerky boss man is just standing out there with a bazooka.
He has a missile launcher.
He just has a bazooka.
It's crazy. And it's just jumped in like it's nothing. And then it is nothing for a while. Like, I thought this was going to be a moment. Oh, this is this comically good old boy, mean boss, cigar smoking guy who also happens to be a big gun nut and have an arsenal in the basement because, I don't know, you know, he deals weapons illegally or whatever through his truck stop. But anyway, that is a good thing to have. Everybody in that truck stop should be on board with this. They could have easily, with what they had in the basement, just stood there in the windows and just like had a stand against them, you know, back when there were only six trucks.
The bazooka is for sure effective, but I don't know how much damage those machine guns are going to do to those Mack trucks.
You just got to hit them in the gas tank.
That's true.
And they're sitting right there on the side. At least blow out their tires. You know what I mean? Like,
there are
all these very simple and easy things that in a better movie, like, at least they would have talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And come on, nobody talks about weapons after this guy pulls one out, shoots one truck down, everybody slaps themselves on the back, and then goes back in and starts playing cards and making out and chilling and sleeping. Like, what?
Well, it's fairly soon after that Emilio Estevez looks at that guy on the toilet and asks him, and they get down there, and it's so dumb. Like, the boss man is mad that they found it, and like, why? Like, this is in your interest too. Like, come on. Like, I'm sure they'll give them back when you're done. I don't know. Like, it's just so dumb.
Like, is your life more important? It's fake drama.
It is fake drama.
It's a lot of like really weird little fake drama scenes, right?
And then that machine gun shows up out of nowhere. Everybody is there by this time. The newlywed, the kid, all of them are there. The highway, there's a line of trucks trying to get there. And then all of a sudden, the machine gun truck starts talking to them in Morse code.
I was like, okay. So first of all, these trucks must know the English language. Second of all, they then also know Morse code because they've got to translate English into Morse code to be able to do it. So then they also have to just trust that someone inside there also knows Morse code. Only in movies does anybody know Morse code.
It just occurred to me, later the machines speak in English.
Yes.
Why couldn't they just do that now?
Exactly.
Why do they have to do it in Morse code? That's stupid. Like, they're in control of radios.
Yeah.
A drive-through screen talks to them later.
Yeah.
Oh, God. So dumb. But anyway, they're demanding gas and they're like, send people out. They won't be harmed. Fill us up with gas. And so they do. And then there's like a 10-minute montage of filling up trucks with gas.
Which is so not in their interest. Oh, my God.
And which is also apparently the most exhausting task one could ever do. Because Emilio Estevez is practically about to, like, fall unconscious on his feet. He's like, oh, I'm so exhausted. Like,
I know.
Dude, you're pumping gas. Like, I get it. It's hot.
I was thinking as this was going on, I was like, well, their gas is going to run out before they do this. And then I was thinking, unless somebody drives a gas tanker in there, and then that actually happens.
Do.
I was really happy. I thought, okay, so these trucks are pretty smart. They could actually keep this going for a while. But the only thing these trucks cannot do, these trucks that are going to menace the world if they're not stopped, they can't refill their tanks.
Yeah. A hairdryer can use its own cord to strangle a woman, but they can't figure out the gas thing.
Now, the gas tanks, pumps apparently are sentient enough that they can act like they're broken and then turn on and spray a guy in the face.
Yeah.
But not sentient enough to fill up their machine friends.
Right. So they fill it up, that long, long montage of them filling up. And they do, like you said, they do run out and then they have to refill with the gas truck or whatever. And then I don't know what end game is. There's a lot of going places via like underground sewage pipes and drainage pipes.
Yeah.
There's a drain pipe that goes under the road, but then there's also like in their shower facility, there's a drainage pipe. I think they're two separate pipes, but they both end up in the same place.
They do, yeah. And I just don't understand why it, from the very beginning, once they discovered that drain pipe and figured they could go through it, why they only used it to go check on the Bible salesman who had been knocked off to the other side of the road and was screaming. Why didn't they all just pile in at that time? The only thing keeping them from leaving the gas station is these trucks circling around, except for that pipe.
Right.
Which they seem to be able to get through pretty easily. So,
well, Emilio Estevez has this big revelation about brooms. Oh, my God. That is one of the wildest. He has a monologue. He's like,
imagine you're a race of aliens, right? And you're looking for a new place to live. So you're looking for a planet like you and I, you know, like we'd look for a new place to live. New house or something. So here's Earth. Well, it's like this big old house. And it's kind of polluted. Dirty and smoky. Grease on the walls. Soot in the chimney. And they send in their interstellar house cleaners. Send in their broom. Sweep us all up.
Oh my God, what? Okay.
And it's out. But then his other revelation, you know, I heard about this island you can go to.
Oh my God.
They don't allow motor vehicles on.
I used to crew on big sailboats. And sailboats don't have motors. We need to get a sailboat, go to the island with no vehicles.
I was like, where is the water? What? You've got to get to water.
I know, it looks like they're in a desert. I don't know. But apparently they're coastal. I don't know.
I was thinking about Mackinac Island. Have you ever heard of Mackinac Island or been there, maybe?
No.
I lived in Michigan for a while. Mackinac Island was famously, like, they didn't allow cars there.
Yeah.
But I'm
yeah.
pretty sure they have machines of other kinds.
Yeah, I've heard of places like islands, communities or whatever that only allow like golf carts or whatever. So I can believe it. That's fine. But so they only stay there until they don't, because there's not any reason. Like at one point, the machine gun goes nuts and kills a bunch of people who I don't know who they were anyway. So who cares? Oh,
the
except
waitress,
for,
who comes running
except
out.
For Wanda Jude.
We made you.
You. Oh, my God. She has a flip out. Not once, but twice.
We made you.
Wanda, no. Get back.
Can't you understand?
Wanda, no.
You can't do this. We made you.
Not once, twice.
And it shoots her, but she has also grabbed that missile launcher, which apparently stays loaded and has a very loose trigger, because as soon as the machine gun shoots her, she kind of falls back and accidentally the missile launcher goes off and hits a truck. And I don't think that's how those things work, but
yeah, I don't know how they work.
Anyway,
I read that they're one use only, like you can't reload them, which I thought was really wasteful.
Well, just as much as that machine gun, machine guns go through bullets really fast. I don't think that tiny little box of bullets next to it would have lasted past that first barrage, you know?
It's ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Yeah.
And they talk about, like, they could plow us down whenever they want, but they don't. I don't know. Eventually, I mean, again, there's nothing really that sparks this. They just decide that they're going to leave, and they do. And that's the moment that the machines decide that they're going to kill them all, apparently, because as soon as they're gone, they're not even to the other side of the road yet in the underground tunnels. The machines, who have just been circling all this time, suddenly decide that they're going to plow the place down and blow it up. And they do. They plow it down, they blow it up, and then they leave.
the 8-year-old in me just loved that scene. I loved watching those cars and trucks plow through that building. Yeah. So fun. It's like watching a demolition derby. There's one very gratuitous scene, which goes on for way too long, but it's fun nonetheless, where a bulldozer is going over a car over and over and over again until it's completely flat and takes down some signs along the way. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. You said it earlier, and I agree with you. There are some really fun action pieces in this. And even just seeing those big trucks driving, you know, that big fast circle, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like, I like big trucks. That's cool. But they get out. This movie is too long. At this point, I'm like, okay, you're out of let's just wrap it up.
Can it be
wrap
done?
It up.
Give us some words on the screen. They go down the street, they make it out fine, and then...
But it takes them a while to get to the marina. It's boring. Nothing really happens. Like, they do, you know, stop at, like, a fast food place, and the order screen is like, humans here. And the kid shoots it with a machine gun. I feel like Stephen King was trying to hit some kind of emotional chord with this kid. Like, let's kill off his dad early on. And then when he gets back, we're going to have to tell him that his dad's dead and he's devastated, but he's pissed off. And then we'll give him a machine gun and he'll shoot the drive-through screen. And that will be his epiphany. And he'll like, I don't want this anymore. He takes the gun off and gives it to Brett. The girl is like, I don't want this anymore. Like, he has had his vengeance and he doesn't want any more violence.
He always hated drive-thrus.
It's so silly. It's stupid. Then they get to the arena and the Green Goblin is chasing them. I don't know how or why.
Well, it just kind of appears magically because they all get there just fine. They're able to get in there just fine. They all get on the boat and one guy decides to hang back because he notices another woman, you know, who's hanging out the window with a giant, larger than life,
comically large diamond. It looks like a ring pop.
Costume jewelry. Yeah, it's ridiculous. So he wrenches it off her finger and then spends about 3 minutes gazing at it and kissing it and whatnot, which gives the truck enough time to magically appear behind him silently. This big truck.
In the fog.
It comes on and he turns around and he looks and he starts to... Oh, he gets hit, right? He gets smashed by that.
Yeah. That's another thing about, like, those trucks will obliterate you. But they don't go from 0 to 60 in, like, 0.2 seconds. They take a while to get moving.
Not
like,
at all.
You would have time to get out of the way unless you're an idiot.
If you can't hear it, you definitely have time to get out. It's not a train. But Emilio Estevez grabs that handy rocket launcher, which is always loaded and always prepared, and they all know how to shoot, blows up the truck, and that's the big ending. They get on the boat. And then as they were pulling away, and I see the marina recede in the distance, I see all these other boats sitting there. I'm like, why aren't those boats that do have motors coming to life and chasing after them?
Yeah, I think there was, I don't know if it was a deleted scene or if it was just in the original script that a Coast Guard boat did come after them and they had to like fight off the Coast Guard boat.
Thank God we didn't.
Oh, my. Right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Because I'm ready for this movie to be over. And that dumb text comes up and says, you know, the Russians shot down a spaceship and then the comet went away just as predicted or whatever. Like, who cares? What are you even talking about?
What are you trying to do here?
We don't know. We don't need this. It's so dumb. And then Yardley Smith is like, you know, her tie. He's like, Curtis, when are we going to get off this boat? You know, I get seasick. Like, oh, God, I was genuinely amused. I was so glad they were so silly. I liked Curtis, too. He was less silly than her, but the two of them together were really silly as these. Like, they were married that day.
It's
like,
cute. It's,
she's wearing, like, flowers in her hair, and they're so wholesome. Was there a part where... Was he fingering her under a blanket?
Yes. Yes, he was. Well, you know, they had to have something to do. These guys are playing cards. This guy's eating a sandwich. This guy's sleeping. And they're giggling as he's fingering her. Yes, by the table.
God.
Yeah.
Well, that was funny. I don't know. Ultimately, watching this movie again, I don't think it deserves all the hate it gets. We've seen much worse.
I agree.
And far more painful. This movie isn't really painful to watch. It's kind of amusing.
No.
Like, it's silly and stupid, but it's kind of funny, and there's good action. I don't hate it. I'm not even mad that I paid $5 to buy it so that we can watch it.
It's a perfect, no, it's so bad it's good movie, really. I mean, look, it's not always engaging because sometimes it's mind numbing. Like, I don't want to see these two having their conversation. I don't want to see these two having a moment. None of it's ringing true. And so it's boring. And, you know, there's a scene where it just kind of pans through on all these characters who we don't care about
right. Are
sitting and playing cards. And these two are having some cute little conversation. And the waitress is half drunk and bitching about her life. And again, like, there was a movie called The Mist, also based on a Stephen King story, but not directed by him and not written by him, that does this a whole lot better. And it's engaging from beginning to end. This is engaging, I think, when the trucks start coming in and blowing shit up.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm also not mad I saw it. I don't think it's that bad. I think just people expect, because we all have high expectations of Stephen King, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Stephen King, he directed it, he wrote it, it's supposed to be great. And it's sort of, by his standards, you know, laughably disappointing.
One thing that I forgot, most of the things about this movie I knew, but doing research this time, you alluded to it, but we didn't really talk about it. There's a huge action piece at the beginning where there are all these cars on a drawbridge, and the drawbridge goes up with all these cars on it. And it doesn't even seem logical. Like, it wasn't that steep of an incline. Like, those cars would have been fine, right? Like, I don't know. The cars start like falling onto one another, and there's like a truck full of watermelons, and these watermelons start falling and like killing people. And the one watermelon falls through a woman's windshield, and the woman like screams and it smashes her. Did you know who that was?
Huh?
It was Marla Maples.
Really?
Yes. Former wife of former President Trump, Marla Maples, in her film debut as woman in car who gets killed by a watermelon
in her face.
That was a surprise.
Some of it was pretty unrealistic. Like, I know as the car was like falling back, as it would hit, like somebody would fly out a broken windshield. Like, why? Like, they're sitting in a seat facing the opposite direction, presumably with a seatbelt on. None of that made sense, but it was fun to watch.
It was action heavy. It was a great way to start the movie. Like, that scene, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in for this.
Yeah.
And then it was a little disappointing, but no, it, lots of fun action stuff, lots of explosions, and I enjoyed it. I don't love it. I wouldn't say like, oh, this is a great movie or it's a hidden gem or anything like that, but it's fine. And I wouldn't discourage anybody from watching it. It's a goofy, good time.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this, and thank you, patrons, for your requests. As we have said many times before, if you join our Patreon, patreon.com/chainsawpodcast, you can go there. For $5 a month, our patrons help us out a lot behind the scenes. Everybody actually sends us requests, but our patrons get to choose amongst our requests which one we're going to do next. So if you want to be in on that action, have access to mini-sodes, mini-reviews that we do. We got a Christopher Pike book club we're doing right now. We have all kinds of fun chatter behind the scenes. Go ahead and give that a look. But the best thing you can do for us really is share this podcast with a friend or write a review for us up on your favorite podcast listening place. Until next time, I'm Todd.
And I'm Craig.
With Two Guys and a Chainsaw.